So I think what's been done with DeepSeek and what they're continuing to do is a really good thing, because it's forcing the market to look at how the mold can be broken. And in breaking that mold, it's going to come apart into constituent elements that can then be optimized.
Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. I'm your host, Demetrius, and have the pleasure of sitting down with Joel Christner, who is the CEO at View Systems. And we are going to dive into empowering enterprises with AI. We're going to talk about a favorite subject that everyone loves to talk about and can't get enough of, and also navigating the path from data to insights, because data, of course, has been exploding and we're all creating it very fast and in a hurry. But are you really getting insights from that data? Joel, welcome on and looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you, Demetrius. Super glad to be here. Thanks for the time.
And what sparked your journey into AI and data management? And also, what were some of the experiences that led you to create the View AI platform?
Great question. I think the world changed in November of 2022 when ChatGPT launched. And I like to think that we were starting to enter into what Gartner refers to as the peak of inflated expectations around that time, because there was this new whiz-bang tool that could answer questions for you and had been trained on a lot of data and had insights from a lot of different sources. And so naturally, the world thought, hey, this is ridiculously powerful, and there's a number of ways that we could use this technology. What I've learned through past lives and in my past role, I was leading research at a large technology company. Everyone wants AI, but the foundation necessary to actually be able to do AI and conversational AI using generative AI and large language models, you have to have a solid data management infrastructure in place where you understand what data assets you have, where they are, and then parse and process those data assets in a way that then makes it consumable for a large language model to use. So to be able to ask questions of your data house has to be in order. And the vast majority of enterprises do not have their data houses in order. It fundamentally boils down to the fact that the data management market is very fragmented. You find one tool that perhaps provides a catalog that works well for you, or an orchestration capability that works really well for you. And the minute you settle in on that tool, it starts reducing the surface area for selection for the adjacent tools that you need for that end-to-end data platform, and increases the integration complexity. So data management is a horrible problem for enterprises to deal with. So we set out to build View to provide something that is horizontally applicable across verticals, across companies, and end-to-end, where you could literally provision an Ubuntu machine or another Linux variant, execute a curl script, which installs everything end-to-end, everything from ingestion through pre-processing to processing to persistence to the AI experience, so that you have an easy button to go from I have data to now I have AI against that data. So what really kicked off the journey was a thorough understanding of the challenges associated with data management.
That sounds fantastic and sounds like fun, but I'm not quite sure how fun it was. But maybe you're starting to have fun now because, you know, everything is in place and you have the initial version of the platform up and running and you're just iterating on new features and functions. And there may be some issues every once in a while, but I think you're headed in the right direction now. Is that right?
It is, yeah. We're in a number of enterprise customers currently. They're using it for everything from federation of data across different departments so that they could create a collaborative conversational platform to empower different departments to utilize the same data sets, to customers using us for customer support chatbots, technical support chatbots, et cetera. The sky is really the limit. And yeah, absolutely. It's got its challenges because data becomes very bespoke very quickly. But thankfully, there's a core set of capabilities that are needed and a core set of use cases that need to be addressed. And the platform is doing really well for that.
Also, I do know that achieving like a really fast and on-premises deployment for AI applications is a challenge that many organizations face. And a lot of them are doing operations in the cloud as well. But what are some of the key strategies for streamlining AI implementations and also reducing the time from setup to operational use?
That's a fantastic question. I think there's a ton of innovation that has and is occurring in the AI space. And the vast majority of it is focused on what we categorize as a born in the cloud, cloud native developer. And let's face it, it's far easier to innovate in the cloud when you as a service provider or a company providing a capability can just expose a RESTful or a message-oriented endpoint over the internet and say, hey, attach to this and consume it. So it's understandable. The challenge I think enterprises face is that in order to use those services in a meaningful way for their business, those services need to have insights into their data. And that becomes problematic when you're talking about intellectual property, you're talking about source code, trademarks, financials, anything regulated or otherwise protected. It's very hard to say, yeah, I'm going to consume this proven service, which we know that OpenAI's API platform is fantastic. So same with Anthropic and same with others. But the challenge then becomes really rooted in organizational policy and regulation. Is this data that I can send out to these platforms? So I would say if you're not burdened by those concerns, 100%, the tooling is there. There's a wealth of knowledge out there about how to build these types of capabilities when you operate under the assumption that your data gets sent out to some other third-party service. When you're building it internally, there's a pretty healthy ecosystem for that as well. We like to refer to those as high school science fair projects because oftentimes enterprise companies will carve off, let's say, a dozen PhD-educated engineers with infrastructure in 6 months and an unknown, unprovable ROI at the start and say, hey, go create a conversational experience over this data so that we can improve understanding of manufacturing flows or offload low priority or easy to resolve cases to artificial intelligence as opposed to having an actual human work on it. That's where it starts getting really difficult. So what we've done inside of Vue is we've packaged that in a way that you can deploy it inside of 15 minutes. And within single digit minutes after that, you can be in a position where you have ingested data and you are having conversations against it. We'd like to think that our platform is appropriate for everybody, but obviously there's going to be cases where it certainly isn't. But the nice thing is you don't need to spend 10 really well-paid engineers and a couple million dollars in infrastructure to go prove it. You can actually download it, deploy it, test it, and inside of an afternoon, you'll know coming out the other end of that afternoon whether or not you have a viable data set for AI-powered experiences. So far, thankfully, we've had good success with it. We have companies that are deploying it. Some of them are actually deploying it in internet-facing applications for customer support and technical support. Obviously, the internal use cases, they're not deploying out to the internet. They're just deploying those internally. But the ones that are focused mostly on their consumers or their partners, they are deploying. Everything that we are doing inside of the platform can be redone. You can absolutely rebuild it yourself. And we've open sourced a number of the libraries that we're using, whether it's document parsing or extraction of metadata or persisting things in a multi-dimensional backend data store, consolidated data store for metadata, graph, and vector. Some of the things that we're doing from a retrieval augmented generation, all of that is available to the public for consumption. And we're going to be doing the same thing with the AI-powered experiences that we produce out of our platform. Those are going to be open source as well. So we feel that having a consolidated platform that allows you to go from zero to AI very quickly is very powerful. We get an amplification effect and a lot more feedback if we open source those elements and take feedback and bugs and enhancement requests from the community too. So I would encourage everyone to definitely give us a try, obviously. But if you don't want to use us, by all means, take advantage of the software that we're releasing and the wealth of knowledge that's out there.
Congratulations on the success that you've seen thus far. And I want to get your take on, and I'm sure you have an opinion on this. Two words, maybe it's one word, DeepSeek. What were your thoughts? Was it game over, game changer, or just a bunch of load of crap?
Wow, that's an interesting question.
Loaded question.
It is. Yeah, it is for a number of reasons. And full transparency, we're part of the NVIDIA Inception program, and we obviously love them. We're partners with Ampere. So we've got our tentacles into the industry. For me personally, I'm excited about the fact that there is an entrant into the market that is claiming that they're able to build out these models in a way that is much more time and capital efficient. I personally have not dug into the details of how it was done. I don't know that a lot of that has been disclosed. I obviously have seen the ripple effect through the market. But the beauty of this space is that it's still, even though ChatGPT was launched 2.5 years ago, it's still quite nascent. I firmly believe that we're in the trough of disillusionment based on Gartner's definition of the hype cycle. I think that what's going to end up happening over the next 6 to 12 months is that people are going to start rallying around the ways to enable technology to make it really useful for a tangible, measurable set of use cases. So I think what's been done with DeepSeek and what they're continuing to do is a really good thing, because it's forcing the market to look at how the mold can be broken. And in breaking that mold, it's going to come apart into constituent elements that can then be optimized. So I think the net result is going to be very positive. The beauty of that platform is that they've released a bunch of their models. You can download them and run them locally. And as far as I know, somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, but a model has no way in and of itself, if you're running it locally, to communicate out to the outside world. It's just a basically a binary file that's sitting on a machine somewhere that's processing inputs and giving you outputs. The fact that they've released those, I think, is an excellent sign, because it's an artifact of the work that they've done, and it's just going to make life better for everybody in AI. I think the next 6 to 12 months are going to be fascinating as we watch this market come out of that trough of disillusionment with solutions to tangible, measurable problems.
I love hearing all the commentary around DeepSeek, because I'm a little on it, right? So I've read all the good, all the bad, and some of the things that can be done, some of the things that are being said. So I have not played around with it myself or even tried to install it on anything, but I'll just sit back and kind of keep my eyes open and ears open to what's going on. And there was another one that I heard about too, Manus. Have you heard of Manus?
I have
Manus. Yeah, that's one you may want to take a peek at as well. Not as many people talking about, but it is out on its mainstream, Manus. And I think it's a little different from DeepSeek, but it's another one of those game changers that seem to be kind of shaking things up a little bit. But yeah, let's talk about enterprise AI, the enterprise AI landscape, and how it's evolving. And see, it's moving fast, because you can throw out one model and someone else can throw out another one and said, have you heard of that? And then you might say, no, I hadn't heard of it, because they're almost coming out daily, right?
That's right. Yeah.
But from your perspective, what are some of the most exciting developments or trends that you think will have a significant impact on the way that businesses use data?
That's a fantastic question. And I think, candidly, Demetrius, most enterprises are stuck in what we categorize as the first pillar of data management, which is ingestion. And it largely boils down to the fact that most enterprises don't have a real good handle on what data they have and where that data lives.
So they're just fat.
I'm sorry.
They're just fat. They just ingested the data and they're sitting on it.
Yeah, or they've got data in sources that we're all familiar with the concept of shadow IT. Some rogue department goes and stands up a couple of servers, and before they know it, it's critical to some business process and can't be decommissioned. And now they're dealing with IT saying, we need to absorb that. And they're saying, you can't do that, because then we lose our ability to be nimble and whatever that could possibly turn into. So I think there's a big opportunity just in terms of data asset discovery and categorization. I think what's going to be really exciting from an AI perspective is obviously there's a ton of innovation happening on the model side. And the beauty of it is it really doesn't matter who's producing the model. That model can get exposed to a large number of people very quickly through a lot of different tools like Hugging Face and Ollama and others. Like, we're running DeepSeek inside of Vue. If you want to use it, you can download the model and you can use it. And I'm sure Manus is probably out there too, though I haven't really looked into it. But the thing that really excites me is the vast majority of the innovation in the what they call retrieval augmented generation, which is effectively supplementing prompts with your private data, information from your private data to give the model context on the question. That's going to start expanding out of the vector space. The vast majority of retrieval augmented generation happens in vector space today. And there's a lot of opportunity to improve accuracy scores and relevancy scores and other metrics by taking advantage of metadata and graph. And not a lot of people are doing that today. I'm happy to say that we are one of the early pioneers in that space. But the beauty of having a solid data management infrastructure in place is you typically end up with a very rich set of metadata over the data assets that you have. And if you intelligently process those to infer or determine relationships between those data assets, now you have a graph relationship of those data assets. So previously, retrieval augmented generation would say, here's the prompt that the user supplied. I'm going to embed it, find the relevant documents, and pack those in as context. But what if you were able to take labels associated with those sets of vectors and relate that back to metadata associated with the source documents? And then in parallel, take those identifiers and relate it back to other documents that are tightly coupled with the document that was retrieved from vector. Or what if your entry point isn't even vector? Your entry point could be graph. Your entry point could be metadata. We're going to see an explosion in terms of accuracy of responses and performance as we start expanding scope beyond just living in vector land for retrieval augmented generation. Technically, that's what excites me. I think what's even more exciting than that is just what it means to users of AI. Imagine if your customer support documents, instead of getting an 80% positive hit rate, you're able to take that to 95%. Now, all of a sudden, it's meaningfully impacting customer satisfaction. And that's just one very minor use case for what they're calling multimodal RAG. So that's what excites me.
And I was just taking a peek at your background and the Master of Science and Computer Science from Columbia, and also those dozens of patents. Congratulations on all of that, by the way.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, do you have any advice for any college students that are out there right now that are trying to enter this job market? And we're in an interesting time. There's a lot of uncertainty. We're in the age of Trump and tariffs and a recession that is pending and looming, and markets are crazy. Hair is on fire. It's a lot is going on. What advice would you give to a college student, someone graduating, let's say, and maybe you can keep it general instead of just computer science or STEM or any technology background? What advice would you give to a young adult now looking to enter the job market?
Yeah, this question hits really close to home.
Yeah, for me too. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. And by the way, if I can help in any way, Demetrius, with anyone, let me know. Happy to. My general advice would be, understand that in the last 2.5 years, so much has changed from a geopolitical and technology perspective that the world is a very different place, and it's going to continue changing for the foreseeable future. AI has effectively taken away a percentage of the usefulness of the technology worker. If they're not taking advantage of AI, then their perceived value, I don't want to say their value because every human has the same amount of value as the next human.
Right.
But their perceived value from the open job market is different. When I look at what is required of today's software engineer, it's very different than what was required 3 years ago. And the market dynamics have adjusted accordingly. Right now, it's very difficult for people to land technology-centric jobs because it is super competitive. And if you're not taking advantage of all of the assets that are available to you for instance, AI, it's going to be quite difficult to land a position. So I would say, number one, take advantage of all of the tools that are available to you. ChatGPT and Claude are wonderful starting points for not only shoring up your skills, building new things, learning, but heck, even optimizing your resume and your cover letter, or having it pose for you the types of questions that you might encounter in an interview if you're able to get to that stage.
Yeah.
Think through the entirety of the hiring process from your first touch point with the company where you want to land a job through all of the stages, the first call with the first person that you talk to. Every single word that you send is going to be scrutinized, right? So take advantage of the tools that you have available to you. Interestingly enough, those that are not going into technology, I think are going to have a lot more value in the open market over the next 10 years. And I think of people in the trades, like in order for AI to affect the job market for people that work with their hands, it's going to be very difficult because there's not a physical element, a robotic element that could ever replace a human. So I think that whole sector, in my opinion,
Elon Musk begs to differ.
We'll see. Yeah. If he's able to pull it off, then, you know, hats off to him. Yay, capitalism. But I think the foreseeable future, that whole space is, I'm sure you've had to deal with contractors in the last 6 to 12 months. They're hard to get these days because there's just so much work available to them. So on the tech side, take advantage of all of the tools that you have available to you. On the trade side, you're in a really good spot. I think the other piece of advice, going back to my own background, technology side of things, all of this technology as it relates to AI and modern application infrastructure and everything is fantastic. But aside from the differentiation that you can create by being conversational and experienced in the modern toolkits that are available today, another way you can differentiate yourself is to not hesitate to go deep. I can't stress this enough. It's a big deal if a junior or a mid-level software engineer understands what the OSI model is. Being able to dive deep into how does the internet actually work? How does a processor work? What are the core layers of an operating system? Those things will set you apart. And I'll tell you where they become differentiating factors is when you start building distributed systems that need to scale. If you don't have a good grasp on those things, if you don't firmly understand how HTTP and TCP and DNS and all of these things work, it's going to be to your detriment. You're going to say, I don't understand why this particular thing is failing or not scaling out the way that I want it to.
And I'm sure some people are thinking that AI is going to figure that out for them as well. Why do I have to learn the OSI model when the AI bot already has it figured out? The agentic system is able to understand what that is and then go and run all the calculations and even do the tasks for me. But all that futuristic stuff, right? We're in the midst of it, and it's a little hard to tell, but it's going on all around us right now. And a year from now, I can definitely tell you that it's going to look different. It's going to feel different. And we'll probably look back and say, wow, I didn't know that we were going to end up here.
For sure.
All right, Joel, one final thing. How can Gumbo listeners get information about View Systems? And do you have a free trial or something out there?
We do. Yes. So first and foremost, we'd love to meet with each and every one of you. It's an opportunity for not only us to potentially provide value for you, but also to hear firsthand about your use case and learn a bit more about your business and the industry at large. If you head over to view.io in your browser, you'll find everything that you need to learn about View there. We have $50 of free trial credit there that gets you roughly 5,000 PDF pages of ingestion. You just need an Ubuntu system to deploy on that is handsomely powered. Give us a good chunk of CPU and RAM and disk once you sign up, which you don't even have to give a credit card. But if you do, hey, that's great. Happy to extend your credits and all of that. We'll give you a simple curl script, one script, and that's all you have to run. And once that script finishes, you have a view deployment running on your system, and you can start ingesting and chatting with your data. And at any point, if you want help on the deployment or have questions, it's just joel@view.io, joel@view.io. I'm here for it.
All right. Fascinating. And I may have to go get me a handsomely powered Ubuntu system, which I do not have, just so I can play around with it. But Joe, thank you again for jumping on, sharing your insight. And this is actually our second take here. And we didn't get a chance to retain the first one, but hopefully this one turns out to be a lot better. And we touched on a couple of things that we didn't touch on the last time as well. And so, Gumbo listeners, thank you again. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. And don't forget about the 26,000 people that are in the Backup and Recovery Professionals group on LinkedIn. You can join that group on LinkedIn, and we have similar conversations to the ones that we're having right here. So, Joel, thank you again.
Demetrius, thanks for your time, and thanks to your listeners. Much appreciated.